What happened to our prayers? We're all unprotected.
I'm glad you're already listening, because they are very helpful actually. And anything which helps a person develop some nice meditation is really, really important. When I was 18, that's when I first meditated. And only 5 minutes of meditation, I was as a student in Cambridge. And still it was peaceful, there was something beautiful in it, something really attractive to meditation. And that beauty, that peace, that delight is what hooked me from the very beginning. It's what I like to hook other people on. The sheer peace and the beauty of meditation. Which means any place, any time, whenever you've got a few minutes, you can actually, in quiet places, if you're not here, or making a lot around you, if you're in a noisy place, you just close your eyes and leave the world, go to a very peaceful, beautiful, restful place. Look after your body, look after your mind. It has a huge impact on your life. So that's why I love, particularly my passion to teach meditation, especially to let people know how it works and how they can also enjoy the same peace as much as we enjoy. But we also have to start at the very beginning. First, it's difficult for people. They always sit down and they either fall asleep or they start thinking. And the powerful is to find that little way so you're aware, not asleep, not thinking, just knowing. Very clear. And so this is actually the path we follow. Last night, I started talking about the Satipatthana Sutta, which is how you can make use of that in probably ways you've never done before. And how you make use of that in the meditation, get yourself started. But there are a few things I've never mentioned, so I'm going to continue on the same subject and how we make use of this in the beginning stages of meditation. Because if any of you have actually studied that or heard it, because it's talked about so much in places like Malaysia, you probably have heard it before. But there is a preparation of the Satipatthana which I never mentioned yesterday. And it is part of a lousy fight from us before we even start to Satipatthana. But that particular phrase is usually translated, where most of you recognize it from, is where it says, having put away grief and covetousness from the world. And what that is entirely smoky and beached of the Nasan. And whether it's in Pali or in English, it probably makes no sense to you, because it made no sense to me either. To put away covetousness and grief for the world. Yeah, sometimes you have grief for your grandma who passed away, but grief for the world and covetousness. That's such an old English saying that no one uses it anymore. So, what I did as a young buck, I had a good brain. So why not learn Sitali, which I did. In school I learned Latin, and Latin is so close to Pali. The structure is almost exactly the same. So it was very easy for me just to learn new vocabulary, new endings of the words, and learn Pali. So then I could read these teachings of the Buddha in the original. And that was just an eye-opener to see what Buddha actually said, not how he was translated it, but how he taught it. And you know, one of the things which I found was first looking through, especially in Christian Nikaya in Pali, just reading it from beginning to end, it's pretty easy to understand, was that term came up again and again and again. Locating at each other. And also to Manasa, not so often, but a few times. And that word translated from Satipatthana as in having abandoned grief for the world, that is a synonym for Kamachandra, the first of the five hindrances. Not just once, but maybe 50 times. It's used as an alternative word for the first of the five hindrances. So it became quite clear
in the study of the Torah, what the word meant was having a man of the first hindrance and a second hindrance, Dota Master, who was a synonym of two sutras for the second hindrance, usually called Vayapada. So there you found out that this was actually meaning having abandoned, or rather not abandoned, because the word is better translated, having restrained, having suppressed, if you like, the first of the two hindrances. And then, of course, you look at how other people translated that and looked in what we call the commentaries. And in that commentary, there you find exactly that. They said those two terms mean having restrained, having liberty, suppressed the first of the two hindrances. Now, that makes the preparations of Satipatthana, having limited one's first hindrance, greed, sensory desire, having limited ill will. And how do we actually do that? By keeping our precepts. By a little bit of sense restraint. Those are the two things which are the preparation for Satipatthana. Precepts and sense restraint. So when I go and teach in the United States, they say, oh no, just do whatever you like, you have alcohol, only it's not your matter. You say, no, that's not Satipatthana. That's where it's meant there, having restrained these first two hindrances, the greed and the wanting, and that is the job of the precepts, and also the ill will, the second hindrance. That's the job of the precepts, and also a bit of meditation, a teddy bear, a great way for restraining one's ill will and negativity. You have a teddy bear, and it's just so hard to get negative. It's so nice and comfy. I'm missing my teddy bear. So, this is our preparation. And then also, look at the sense restraint. Right, again, that's why we have the silence, as much as we possibly can. Just to restrain, you know, just going out into the world, looking at this, going at that. My two attendants did ask me this morning, do you really want, at the end of the retreat, to go up on a cable car? I said, hey, that might be a good idea. At the end of the retreat, we can take all the other cows, and I go up to the casino and top it off. All the places in PGF too. Double or nothing. How about storage class and house? No, we don't do that. Because once actually, a very famous nun did that. Mariah Kamer. She was the nun responsible for this story. You know what she did? She was in England and she was teaching meditation retreats. So having finished the meditation retreat, she was being driven on the retreat place at Heathrow Airport to catch a flight back to, I don't know where she was going, but leaving the country. And on the way, they had to stop for lunch before noon. So they stopped for lunch, and the driver brought us some lunch, and because the driver eats in the afternoon, and she finished early, I came and was still eating. And so when they passed out of the restaurant, and it was in England, the restaurant was next to a pub. You know, you had to go through the bar to get to the restaurant. There's no carrying, somebody went quickly. So, as they're going up, through the front of the bar, there was one of these machines, like you have a getting, probably, but these things go down. What do you call them? They call them poking machines in Australia. Slot machines. A jackpot. We know what I'm talking about. So, the driver, she had a few English coins left over, but not enough to go to her counter and get them exchanged for the currency where she was going to. So not enough to really change them, but too heavy for her pockets. So she thought, I'll just put them in the slot machine. And that's where we'll reward them. So she put the $2 in the slot machine, pulled the handle, round it went, nothing happened, another $2, pulled the machine. Again, for the last coin, she just put it in the machine, and who walked past? But I came with that. Now this driver, this little clerk, the attendant, said, well, you have all the good karma, not me. You pull the hammer. And in one moment, lack of mindfulness. That's what she basically called it. Is that easy? Jackpot. Honestly, you can't believe these things, because they wouldn't actually happen. The jackpot happened. And all this money is like pouring out of the machine onto the nuns row, all over the place. A lot of thousands of pounds, I don't know how much, in the jackpot. Just one pool, that's all. So, this was in the front of the car, in the car. And as soon as that happened, everyone freaking the bar and totally quiet. This was amazing. And then the man behind the bar served the drinks. He got out of the room and rang it, ding. Because it was the custom. You know, in England, you have customs, so many customs and traditions, you have to keep them. That anyone who won the jackpot had to buy a round of drinks for everyone in the bar at the time. So the poor nun had to pay all of these debts and buy whiskey, gin and tonic for everyone in the bar. That's a trouble. So I'm not going up there. I'm not going anywhere near a casino or one of those machines. You know what happens if I put it? It wins. And that's a big trouble. Losing is no problem. But when you win, then it's big troubles of luck. But anyway, so let's go back now to the keeping the space, keeping just the happiness and joy, and just keeping your recess while you're here. That is strange, those hindrances. Which means your mind is all over the place. Which means you've got a higher chance for some energy to start building up in your mindfulness. Because for most people, you are no mindfulness state. It's not your fault. Don't feel guilty about it. It's just because you work hard. You have to go backwards and forwards. I don't know how much work you have to do, just that fundraising dinner or Saturday evening. I don't know what time you go into bed that night, but it's really good. And all the other people helping out, sorting out this retreat, it's a lot of work. So with all of that activity, your mind will be low in energy. It's just what happens. So when you restrain it, you think, sense restraint, you're not doing very much, you're not talking. For those of you on retreat here, it's brilliant, you don't have to do anything. You know, the food is not there ready for you. You don't have to cook it. You don't have to wash up. You don't have to talk to your husband. You don't get it. You don't have to show up. You don't have to worry about your kids. What about you? Who cares? But it's so simple when you're here. Because it's simple in this retreat, it means that you're not losing so much energy. Energy has to start to just to build up and build and build. And that's when you get strong mindfulness. And you know you have strong mindfulness when you wake up in the morning and you're clear. You're not what to do this morning. When you're not really human until you've had your first cup of coffee. But after a while, you know, okay, this is a quiz for you. Who is this? Who is this? You can wake up in the morning and you're happy even without any coffee or any caffeine at all. That you can speak anywhere at any time and be always happy. You don't have insomnia. You have no stress. You're always happy to see the people you live with, you can eat anything, and you have no stress, always happy. Who is that?
No.
It is your dog. Maybe you've got a dog out who likes it to be a cup of coffee, he's happy straight away. He's always happy to see you, and he can even match out of the dog, and he's still with you. They've got no stress. You imagine the dog having to go to the psychologist and depressed. Many dogs have committed suicide. I don't think they have. They're repeating those stress. But you can feel like that even harder than a dog, where you relax and peaceful, and then you find the energy starts coming back into your body. And this is one of the reasons why the first couple of days of surgery, don't expect anything at all. Just be rested. If you need to go back to your room, any time, go back. Even do it myself, don't have this one. Go back to your room. Because you will find you have what in psychology they call sleep deficit. You haven't had enough sleep over the last 3 months. Especially for someone like Paul Fitter. So I mean, if you work somehow, so you've got a nice bed, come use it. You know, it's not that expensive in this place, but still you have to pay money for your bed. So get the most use out of it. And anyway, to encourage you to rest, there is, those that go on my retreats in Perth know this one, it is remembering how the Buddha's attendant, Ananda, became fully enlightened. So we call this the Ananda method of meditation. It was successful. This is what made him enlightened. Because you may know the Buddhist story about Ananda was the Buddha's attendant for 25 years. Sitting right next to the Buddha, listening to all these amazing teachings, seeing all these great monks and nuns come up and become enlightened. For 25 years, he was just a slave, and he wasn't getting anywhere at all. He was just working, serving all that time. And when the Buddha said he was about to pass away, oh my goodness, if I couldn't get enlightened when I was sitting right next to a Buddha, what hope is there for me once he's dead? So the poor Ananda was just so dispirited. And of course, the Buddha passed away. There was lots of work to be done afterwards. So poor Ananda thought that he blew in this lifetime, that he would get enlightened. But what happened next? A few months after Buddha passed away, all the senior monks decided that we have to preserve these amazing teachings. And the only way we could do that, let's have a big conference. Let's bring all of the famous monks together so we can actually rehearse all of the teachings which we've remembered, and we can keep rehearsing it, that way we can preserve the teachings. So that was our idea, that's what happened with Satipanaka. I think you probably read that to see. But I had to get 500 monks in there, but anyway, But anyway, 500 monks were invited, they were invited. 499 others were fully invited. And the odd one out was Ananda. They said we have to invite him even though he's not invited because he's hurt so much. So there, the following day, Ananda would have to face all of his friends. They'd all graduated and you were still in school. Imagine that, you meet all of your friends from school at a reunion. And you find they're all doctors and professors and university graduates, and you are still repeating your articles. How do you feel? You feel so embarrassed. And so he said to himself, tomorrow I have to be with my friends. They're all in life, but I'm still stupid. Why would I do something about that? So that night, he gave it everything he got. No No rest. This was enlightenment or bust. He really gave everything he got. Full energy, full power, using everything he'd ever heard to try to get enlightened. And when that dawn rose, he was so stupid as ever. Not enlightened. Not even the time to enlightened. And that was just really depressing. So what do people do these days when they're depressed? If they were a girl, they go shopping. So this is a man. Shopping therapy. It is a man. Can't go to the pub. That's where people in the Hebrew crowd, that's where everyone gets depressed. No, he's like, God saying that. About an hour before the meeting starts, oh, okay, we don't have all time, I'll take that. So he went to his room, and he went to lay down. And just before his head hit the pillow, he became a 500 Arahat, fully enlightened. He cracked it just at that moment. Why? Because he let go! It was crying all that time, and now he came up. He relinquished. He let go. He stopped crying. He stopped trying to get payments. He abandoned. That's why he became Ananda. So, from this day on, we call that the Ananda method of enlightenment. So, if you want to try that method, after the talk, you're going to feel good. And lay down. Obviously, probability, the more times you do it, the more likely one day it's going to work. So don't say I'm taking a nap. Say I'm fasting and I'm the meditation. You know what happened next? I was like, yeah, it was great. Not only was he enlightened, he had psychic powers as well. The whole package. And so, he said, well, how can I convince my friends? But I've cracked it, not in my head. So he deliberately arrived late. When the time had come, they waited a few minutes, and then they locked the door of the hall. And Ananda was still outside. So he entered through the keyhole. That is called making an entrance. So, if you want to prove to everybody here that yes, you're invited, you can maybe the keyhole over there, not me. And then that'll be cool, that'll be awesome. Then he said, okay, yes, I'll give you a stamp, yes, in my psychic house. But anyhow, the reason I tell that story is it's good to have a bit of rest in the first few days, and don't expect very much. You catch up. The alternative is you say, no, I can conquer my body with my willpower. So you are sleeping a lot, I'm going to stay sick. I'm going to get up there early. I'm going to make sure every day this week I'm going to be up here at 5:45, so I'm the first one in here, and I'm going to be the last one to leave the meeting. I'm going to really give everything I've got. That's giving all the willpower and not giving up wisdom and kindness to what you're doing. You work with your body. You can actually feel it inside. And you keep pushing, you get more and more tense. Your peace officer goes to high agitation. It's going the wrong direction. So instead, just relax. You will fall asleep during meditation. It's natural. Until your energies and mindfulness start increasing. When they get to a certain level of energy, because you're not doing anything, you're relaxing, you're restraining. You are restraining the first two hindrances of wanting and doing and your will. Then you find the energy builds. So you have natural mindfulness, which means you can sit for an hour, no problem at all, not falling asleep, and be able to have enough mindfulness of the body to really relax without falling asleep. Enough mindfulness of the peace monitor that you don't go off into thoughts or again into numbness. You can see it clearly. You know what it is because your mindfulness is strong enough energy and power. So that's what it really means by having enough mindfulness to begin with. It's having enough energy in your mind to begin with. And that energy comes from rest. Physical rest, but what's more important is mental rest. So for goodness sake, you don't have to think about the stock market. Thinking about it's not going to change it. You don't need to think about your family. You think about the rest of the year. Let them look after themselves for a while. And anyway, I have so many stories, like the story about the doctors in Jerusalem. This is true, I had the paper. They went on strike for 2 or 3 weeks. In the 3 weeks they went on strike, they did emergency work but nothing else. In the 3 weeks the doctors were not working in the hospitals in Jerusalem. The death rate plummeted. Not so many people died, but the doctors were working. That's interesting, what's going on there. Sometimes we think, oh, we have to intervene, we have to do something. Sometimes one of the best things to do is to stand back and live it alone. In Australia, the economy never goes as well as when the government are not working. When the government has this policy or that policy, they're always messing up. So there's a lot to be said for inactivity. I know I'm showing examples in KL, but it's certainly happened in Australia. Every now and again, there's a power outage in the intersections. No red lights, no yellow lights, no green lights. And the traffic runs so much more smoothly when you trust people to make the right decisions, when traffic to go through, when to stop. Because I know I've had this many times, we've had a red light, there's no one for miles coming in the opposite direction, we still have to wait. But actually not having so many controls, things often flow much more smoothly. But even in your body, sometimes the best way of healing the wound is to put plaster on, clean it, isolate it, and let the body heal it, instead of keeping on interfering with it. So a lot of times, I like the idea of inaction as a positive way to create very good outcomes. And that's especially from the mindfulness. Just leave things alone. Don't worry about stuff. It usually goes quite fine without you. You're not that important, which means that you can relax and don't need to think about so much. What do you think about anyway? How often has your thoughts come up with great solutions? How many times have you solved the world's problems with thinking? Even with good old Donald Trump, did you hear about the assassination attempt on Donald Trump? Man at one of the meetings, he pulled out a gun and pointed it at the president-elect, Donald Trump. And one of the security guards shouted out, "Donald, duck!" And he said, "That's the first gun off." And he pulled it. That's how you do with us. So if you haven't had a big bow rush, which means you can relax, your mind will start to increase. You know, a lot of the things you're about, you'll wheel along now, wanting something, craving. So when those two things are strained, first of all, then you get aware. When you get aware, then you can feel the body. You know what's going on in here. When you can start to feel it, that's the mindfulness. And I was saying yesterday, to find out what makes it more peaceful, what makes it more agitated or more painful. And if you want to know where that comes from, that's where it says in the Satipatthana. You notice the arising of things, this origin. You know how they disappear as well. It doesn't mean just rise and fall, it means the causes for the pain to get worse, and causes for it to disappear. If you want to check me out on that, that is in the Satipatthana Samyutta, number 42. I know it's number 42, because this year I've got 42 reigns. What a luck. About time I retired, I guess. I mean, 40 years in any company, they usually give you a gold watch. Or something. You know, I had a friend who was working in Harris, this top department store in England. He was working there, and one of the fellows said, after 40 years, he has no toilet cubicle. That's all they get. Thank you for all the service. That's all they get. His own private, he's got a cold cube, his own toilet cubicle in Harris.
What a waste of profit.
It's so weird that all I get, why don't you order? Thank you so much.
We have to be very proud.
Anyway,
back to get to the wise form. Number 42 is actually the sutta where it explains what it means by the wise and what theology, what causes these things to come up. What causes the pain? What causes it to relax and ease off? This is actually where you learn how your own body. And of course, when you learn about it, you've got some control over it. You deal with aches and pains and sicknesses and other stuff. Why is it we don't have sort of now that we have so many sicknesses and pains and stuff? We have learned about our body. Well, the very simple thing which I learned and taught, again, amazing results. The one about every emotion in your body, so every emotion in your mind, with anger, with its ill will, with its love, has a corresponding physical feeling somewhere in your body. When you're grief-stricken, you're really sad, you've lost someone really close to you, you can feel that somewhere in your body. It's a physical sensation in one particular place in the body, different than any other locations, any other physical feelings associated with that emotion. I want you to be mindful of that. It's amazing just how that can open up so many areas of emotional cures. But it is not hard. Now the classic story of this lady, she had anxiety, panic attacks, big time panic attacks. So gross, she was bedridden, couldn't get out of bed. Even though she was at Adelaide University at the time, having top doctors, top psychiatrists, psychologists, give her free care, nothing worked at all. She was paralyzed with fear, couldn't even get out of the bed. And she was really lucky, her boyfriend, she had a boyfriend, and these are boyfriends, and girls, if you ever find a boyfriend like this, get a ring up from him as soon as you possibly can. These are boyfriends, very, very rare, high quality. Because he would cook for her, clean for her, do anything for her because she was unable to do anything. So, unfortunately, her uncle was a strong supporter of mine and told her to call me from Adelaide to Perth. And when she told me what the problem was, the solution was obvious. I said to her, next time you have a panic attack, a big one, so find out where it is located in your body. She said, I know, it's in my chest. I said, that's not good enough. I want coordinates, centimeters and millimeters, from your belly button, your navel. How much up, how much to the left or the right, and how wide is that feeling? I want more detail. Give me a call in 3 days. Make us something to do. In 3 days, because she was a smart lady, she said, yes, I can now answer you. Every time I have a panic attack, I can feel the tension, the tightness, about 6.4 millimeters up from my about 2 inches or 2 centimeters to the right. It's like an oval, about this wide, and she really got a good description. That's getting mindfulness. Not just say it's around here somewhere. Be clear observation. So you get more details so you can tell somebody over the phone, a couple of thousand kilometers away, what's happening. Great, I said. Now, what does it feel like? And she said, oh, it was just tense. Oh, good enough. I want a clear description. As if you had to write this down in 1,000 words on a piece of paper. Because I really feel the doctors. When you go to see them, they say, well, what is it? It's painful. Yeah, I mean, what painful? Describe it. Well, it's just painful. How on earth can a doctor work on something like that? It's just too vague. So, 3 days later, she called me and she gave this amazing, I was really impressed, this picture of the skin, the tightness, the expansion. It's the ache, the burning pain, the cutting pain, whatever it was. It's amazing. It's great. Now you're mindful. Without feeling.
She observed it and observed it. The trick was to get her students because she had to pass the test to tell me. She passed. So next thing, when you have a panic attack the next time, and now you're aware of it, kindness. Take your hand and massage the hair, massage. As much kindness as possible. It's really sensuous, warm, warm. As if you're in a spa and getting a massage. And she said, well, sometimes I'm too weak to do that. I said, no trouble. Ask your boyfriend. Boyfriends have actually probably been very happy to massage you, yeah? So, give me a call in 3 days' time. So, 3 days' time, she called back again and said, do you follow me? Yeah, she said, every time I have a panic attack, I massage the area, if I could do it, my boyfriend did. So what happened to the feeling you had, the tension, the burning pain in that part of your tummy? So it went away. As you would expect. But then I asked her, what happened to the anxiety? And that's, I will never forget that moment. A classic, what they call, lifelong moment. You figure it out. You get an insight. You understand. My anxiety went as well. Great. Now you know what to do. Because many of the emotions, they're a bit too difficult for us to be mindful of and understand. But the physical counterpart in our body, we can understand that we're much more God conscious than we are mind conscious, as human beings in our body world. So we're on the body. And so I said, now you know what to do. Every time you have a panic attack, massage the area. The corresponding physical feeling will go, and so will the emotional feeling at the same time. Very important. And it worked so beautifully. Huey made it out of hospital, back to her studies, passed with first class honours, went off to do an extra course over in Sydney, and how to pick only 2 people accepted, she was one of them. And a couple of years later, she came back to Perth, the same boy, Roy. Might have been marriage for they're still together, we've got 2 kids, saw them the other day. I'm their mother. I saved her life. Otherwise she'd probably be institutionalized by now. It works. This is every emotion you have. Fear, grief, anger. Next time you get angry, feel it in your body. What's it feel like, anger? But where is it you feel it? Well, once you know this word, describe what it feels like. You're going to be really aware of it, enough to be able to locate it. How big is it? How narrow is it? Is it circular? Is it square? Is it the strength? The tension? What is it like? And once you feel it, describe it to somebody. Really clearly. To do that, you have to watch it and watch it and watch it and watch it, really mindful of it, and then you can start massaging. And when the physical counterpart to anger vanishes, so does your anger. It's gone. There's a brilliant way, using mindfulness, awareness, and kindness, because the kindness is only an accident. That's the cause which allows it to vanish and disappear. That's what we do at a certain time. We're aware of how these things come and how they go. The causes. But once you know the causes, then you've got the control. Take away the cause. Find out why that's happening. Do something else. And then you find all those anger, grief. You're in control of those things. You can just let them go very easily. Not that you're saying, oh, let go. You know exactly what to do to let it go. But the kindness just massages you here. So that is powerful. Here was one of the doctors over in Perth. He came on a Friday to see me. Had to see me because it worked! One of my patients had chronic anxiety so bad she couldn't breathe, had to be on oxygen all the time. And as a doctor, a young doctor, she said, I did what I was trained to do. Gave this medication, if that didn't work, the next one on the list. If that didn't work, the next one on the list. A whole list of medications for anxiety. Until she got to the last medication on the list, and this woman was still anxious. Still in bed, couldn't go anywhere, off your good mask on, otherwise you're too anxious to breathe properly. And so, Thursday night, she didn't know what else to do with this doctor, so she said, well, no one's going to come. I know I might get into trouble for this, because this is not medical procedure. Had to have a glass of medicine. Next time you have anxiety attack, I need your body to get your hand in this. So she told that doctor, told that agent the month before, the following morning when she came to work. This patient, oxygen mask off, so I feel great now, thank you very much, I'm going home. And I've been scolding that doctor. You should have told me that at the beginning. Not waste so much of the government's money on this expensive medication. What you want to do afterwards? But whatever, this actually works. Because your mind will get aware of your body. And later on, your mind can get so strong you can actually wake up your mind. So you can understand why people get dull. Why you get restless. We find the causes of these things. Dullness. When I was a young monk, I used to always fall asleep early in the morning. Meditation. Because we used to get up at 3 o'clock. But it was optional. You didn't have to get up at 3 a.m. You could get up at 2 a.m. if you wanted. Earlier. Not later. So there you go, getting up at 3 o'clock. And this was, I told her already, I like the cool. No, give me an air cover, it's 16 or something. I like cold weather. So, in Thailand, there was no, this is not, this is low down, not this beautiful place up the hills over here, up the mountains. This was so hot every morning. It was in a jungle, it was so humid. It was so oppressive. And we were only supposed to sleep 4 hours every night. And I cheated. I did 4.5. And that's all I could do. And I was young. But I was malnourished. You know, I told you some of the food we had to eat there. I was spending, I think I told this in, was it in PGM about frog soup? Frog soup. One meal of a day. I think I said this because somebody was asking about being a vegetarian. I was a vegetarian before as a monk, but once you went to Northeast Thailand, there were no vegetables. No fruit, except in the season, no vegetables. The usual meal was rice and whatever crawled on the forest floor. So this particular day, it was frog soup and rice. For our one meal of the day, that's all we had. No breakfast, no dinner, no snacks at evening, just boiled sticky rice and frog soup. Now to describe frog soup for you is a big saucepan with water in, that's a soup. No salt, no garlic, no chili, no soy sauce, nothing, just boiled water and floating frogs. And that's an inch long, maybe an inch and a half, just big enough to put on a spoon. You have as many as you want it. And we got the best ones because we were monks. The village was chose the very best ones for us, and they had what was left over. So at least you had the best ones. Some of the ones are this big. You put them on the tree, you have to put a sticky rice first of all. Then you put the frog on the spoon, you put it in your mouth, and you went crunch. No salt, just boiled frog. Not all the bones taken out like filleted frog. Not with the insides and organs taken out like we do sometimes for chickens. Just everything. What is the yuck for? Have you ever tasted it? What do you know about frog soup? You're all like, this is disgusting. That's all we have to do, all we have to. So I was, and it's also the most important thing in this story, is it's hardly any nutriment in those frogs, even though frogs were malnourished. She was made poor by the world. So they were almost malnourished in a hot climate, sleep deprived. And I think, obvious, those are the course it is. That's why we first meet in the morning. But what I understood, what I got wisdom from, I had to go and do my thesis in Bangkok once a year. So I went into Bangkok and he got some decent food there. And of course, there's no curries, fruit, some vegetables. They have vegetables in Bangkok. So I got some decent food. And in the temple we were staying at, there was a modern temple, a rich temple. They had one room with an air con. And because we said, well, we get up at 3 o'clock, none of you city ones get up that time, we're not going to use it. Can we use it in the early morning for meditation? So we had got the key to use it in the early morning before our sleep. So then I had good sleep, and I had good food, air con room, perfect meditation. No speakers at all. But it's obvious. There was nothing wrong with me. There was just the situations around. Those are the causes. And I say to this day, if the Buddha had been born in London, he would have fallen as we found the Bodhi tree as well. It's just cause and effect, that's all. So when you understand cause and effect, you understand why people get sleep in meditation. So when you get tired, stop and fall in meditation, and just go fighting and fighting. Ask why. Why are you dozing off in meditation? When you actually find out why, you find out maybe it's a bit too hot, you take off your blanket. If it's too cold, you get another blanket. If it's, now you haven't slept enough, go to bed and catch up. You have eaten well, or you've been going through some sickness, it's nothing to do with you. It's just nature, that's all. The same when you're restless. If you're restless, it should mean you've been working too hard. Worrying too much, thinking too much. You can't suddenly flip a switch and stop that brain working. It's got to slow down, slowly, 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 until it thinks less and less and less and less. It slowly goes quiet. So once you know the causes and effects, then you know how to meditate. You don't waste so much time, and you don't get so frustrated. So I say, don't go banging your head against the big wall, unless you're one of those Jewish priests. That's what happened once. This American tourist, he went to Jerusalem, they had this place called the Wailing Wall. And there these very strict Jewish people, they literally knocked their head against the wall. And then they asked him, so what are you doing that for? I said, I'm praying for world peace. Are you getting anywhere? No. It's like knocking my head against the wall. That's where it came from. That's like knocking your head against the wall. From Jerusalem. But don't you do? What are you getting a headache? So be wise. Whenever you come across a bit wall in meditation, stand back. And you will find, just to the left is the door. Just the right, so that's the door opener. Somebody showed me a video, a news clip. Australia was building another detention centre for refugees, or we call it Leave and Migrants, whatever we call it. And millions of dollars. It's much cheaper just to give them a first class ticket to somewhere else. I don't know, I'll leave them, look after them, let them come in. But anyway, politics is politics. But they could only afford the gate. And on the news clip, they showed this high-tech security gate. They were really impenetrable. There were guards, laser eye, everything. But then the camera panned back. And about 5 meters to the right, the fence ended. Because they never had enough money to fix it. A bigger gate! To make fence! To the left or the right. That's government for you, politics, probably the same place. Really good man, but nothing else. Can't just walk around on the other side. So that is like the obstacles in meditation. Too often, we don't stand back and see the causes. And then it's so easy to overcome obstacles in meditation. It seems that mindfulness gets strong. The stronger it gets, the more you can see. The more you can see, the more you understand. you understand how easy it is to weed through the obstacles in meditation, especially the new ones. You're not changing so much, you're not worrying so much, you're not so tired, and your energies come up. And the last thing I'm going to say about the energies of the mind, you understand from your mindfulness, from your awareness, the less you do, the more energy you get. And the more energy you get, the happier you become. Mental energy is mental happiness, joy. It's just the equivalent. The more inner energy you have, the more happiness you have, the more joy. The less energy you have, the less happiness. And now you understand where depression comes from. Grumpiness. Very low energy state. You understand when maybe your loved ones come home from work after a busy day stuck in the traffic. When they come home, they're angry at you. They're not in a good mood. Nothing to do with you. Everything to do with their low energy. They've been struggling so hard all day just to get through the day and get home. With low energy. Grumpy. So don't take that as a personal failure. It is just normal, natural. Course and effect. So, you understand how to deal with it. Don't even talk to your husband until after an hour after he's gone home. After he's had a good cup of tea or coffee or something to eat. And then he's human again. He's actually related to him. It's just low energy. He needs to push his energy up again. So, this is understanding where that comes from. And also the depression. Sometimes I wonder, there was not so much depression around when I was a young man. Depression is a much modern illness. Why? What is the difference? Stress, too much work, too much struggle. That's why we get depressed. We're wasting too much energy, we don't know how to recover it. So, if you can learn how to be peaceful, be still. Then your energies are conserved, energies go up, much, much, much less likely to suffer depression. Much less likely to get angry when you're upset. You're a high energy person. Simply because you're not being still. So, this is where we learn. Cause and effect. We understand the chrysometer, how to be peaceful. Remember what I was saying yesterday about chrysometer? First of all, relax as a body, get to know your body, relax as it's nice and peaceful. And then, you don't get that spot and torpor, so you don't have to struggle. You rest it, you feel good, healthy. And then you go up to the mind. Look at your peace on this app. Be mindful of the chitta, the mind. How peaceful or how agitated it is. Once you know that, you really get to know it well. You can describe it to yourself. You can give it a number, not just 1 to 10. Decimal places. My peace level is about 3.265. Know it clearly. So when you know it clearly like that, maybe I'm exaggerating a bit, 3.2 is enough. But you know it clearly because you're aware of it, it's something you pay attention to, then you can get some control of it. You know what makes you more agitated, what makes you more peaceful. You learn how to meditate from the feedback. You're watching the right area. How to become more and more and more peaceful. Wow. And that is the beginning of the meditation. And from there, we take off into watching things like the friends or anything else you want to do. But that's the start of it. Okay. So there we go, that's this morning's talk for now. Any questions from the floor about this? I've got itchy nose because when I heard this from my father, I inherited many things from my father, 10 bad jokes. I got that from my father. Remember those jokes? I remember this from my father. He came home one day, and I was only a school kid, he said, oh, terrible, yes. One of my friends had a motorbike accident. when we went to the hospital, you know, this was years ago, but that is what happens sometimes, isn't it? Went to the hospital, they had to amputate his leg. They amputated the wrong one. So as soon as they found out, straight back into surgery, to amputate one which really needed to be taken off. So he lost both of his legs. But as soon as he recovered, out of hospital, he hired a lawyer and sued the hospital. He lost his case. He didn't have a leg to stand on.
The truth!
What I can make this bad point is a metaphor. You've got no case. He told that joke, really sick. That was my father. So, yeah, it's in my genes, okay? I'm not going to think about it. So, no. That's a cause and effect. But he also had an accident. I haven't got asthma, but I've got allergies, and so every man gets a really itchy nose. So, it'd be wonderful if there's any doctors here. It's amazing, sort of, the advances in medicine. You can now have skin transplants or face transplants. You can have heart transplants, lung transplants, I'm just waiting. A nose transplant? My nose sucks, it's still. It's always sneezing or itching. So, if anyone's got if you die, you know, an organ donor, can you put that in your nose and have some fun, please? Your nose, thank you very much.
We got a solution without any surgery.
The solution without any surgery. Fine.
Then you get reborn again.
Reborn again. Maybe next time a better nose. I don't know what I did to get a bad nose. Maybe I punched the mic at the nose or something. Anyway, any serious questions before we finish up? Okay, so now is the opportunity, it's now 10 o'clock. So your lunch is 12:30, is it? 12 o'clock is your lunch. So you've got a couple of hours. You can actually meditate here in this room or go downstairs and do some walking meditation. Maybe tomorrow I'll talk a little bit about walking meditation. So you can try downstairs walking meditation, or if you really want to try the Ananda method, back in your room, make sure you want mantra. What mantra? That is amazing. Now people can sleep through the morning meeting. I've never had anyone sleep through lunch. What mantra? You have a body rock inside. You will wake up when it's time for lunch. So anyway, have a beautiful morning, relax, make peace, watch the peace monitor, and see how you fresh your mind more and more peaceful. Okay. Happy birthday.